Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Tyler, I'm tempted to start in a few places on the show. We had MJF singing. We had FTR winning the tag team titles. We've got All In coming back, and it's coming to Wembley Stadium this August in a big announcement. What stood out to you among those three items? What should we start with, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, also leaving out the New Zealand elephant in the room, too, as part of that. But I think that we can get to that. That didn't, you know, those three things were more important the way they were presented. But, yeah, I think the big announcement is where I would start. And, you know, I find it to be a fun sport to determine if Tony Khan's big announcements are truly big. But I would say this would, you know, clarify, this would classify this episode with the Jay White debut and this. You know, if Jay White was the everyone's guess, you know, him or Mercedes, Monet. So that happened, and there's a big announcement of the first stadium show in AEW history, the first UK show. I think that's a relatively big announcement. So I think he passed, which is surprising.
It's actually funny, the Jay White thing, of course, that's, you know, top four. And I'm sitting here just thinking, oh, what should we start with? And I'm working backwards, and I didn't even get that far. Let's start with Jay White. I like that. WWE dominated the news this week, good and bad. You know, I mean, for, you know, just monumental news of the sale to Endeavor, and then obviously that came right after WrestleMania and sort of right before WrestleMania on night two when the news broke. And then we had Vince McMahon, you know, meddling, wreaking havoc back at Creative, kind of taking over Raw behind the scenes and that making headlines. And it was kind of nice, like, when Dynamite started. I'm like, ah, nice break from all the WWE stuff. And it was a super fun weekend for WWE and, you know, for the job that I have, an amazing week in terms of news and trying to make sense of things. But it was fun to just lean back and be like, we'll have 2 hours of good wrestling. And then AEW starts, like, with the hottest free agent out there, Jay White, lands in the company. We don't get the advertised Ricky Starks-Juice Robinson match, but we did get a big angle. Jay White is the AEW. You know, when who knows what the future for CM Punk is? And, you know, heck, who knows if MJF signed beyond this year or not? Just, you know, certain things just, you know, Miro's gone. The thing about the AEW just having this incredible roster depth, it yes and no, you know, but, I mean, there have been some absences. It's good to see, you know, Christian come back. He had something in Luchasaurus that was, you know, top five, six, seven, you know, little happenings on the show. I don't know, maybe eight or nine as we go through here, if I forgot even more things. Jay White, somebody who can make a difference. You know, you got Adam Cole back in the mix after he had been out for a while. And now Jay White, I think Jay can be, well, I mean, this is not a profound statement, but Jay can be a top, valuable top tier player. Another recent order main events, another recent order pay-per-views. He can be a main event guy for them. Just talk about the impact that Jay White can have and evaluate what you think about evaluate what you think he can mean to AEW. How valuable can he be?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, if it was before this weekend, I would have advised him to go to WWE if that was going to be on the trajectory that they were on, just to utilize, you know, trusting Paul Levesque to utilize him in his star power. But obviously things have changed over there and who knows what the interest was with him. But yeah, I think AEW, you know, you have more of a built-in, your, you know, 900, 1 million, 1.1 million, whatever you want to quantify the AEW audience as at this moment, is more ready-made to have at least heard of Jay White, the buzz around him, et cetera, the way they've embraced someone like Takeshita, who has much less buzz coming into AEW than someone like Jay White has had. You know, like you said, he's a ready-made guy if you present him in the right way, and he is that guy who can have, you know, MJF, Bryan Danielson, Hangman Page, Adam Cole, Kenny Omega style 30, 40 minute matches that are epic and 2 out of 3 falls, hour long matches on TV, et cetera. And, you know, those happening occasionally on AEW television and pay-per-view is what really is a big difference in the presentation between AEW and WWE, amongst other things. So he's a guy that fits that bill nicely, is a good talker. But, you know, like most of the people that I just mentioned there, the character, you know, besides Danielson, I would say, the character being well-defined and controlled can be an issue, and he's usually in a group. He was in Japan, so is he going to do that sort of thing there? So that's all, like, the question marks with him. But, you know, a younger Kenny Omega is the ceiling for him, and a, you know, maybe a middling Hangman Page is his floor, no matter what he does, if I had to give it to someone who hasn't ever watched him regularly. But, you know, I think we need to talk about the main thing here is that, like, just like his initial debut, I mean, he opened the show, but it felt like if you're going to debut a guy who's going to be a top star really soon, it's not going to be in this manner, attacking Ricky Starks and kind of having the crowd be half, I don't know who this guy is, and not having any pomp and circumstance. So to me, that's not the way I would have debuted him, but it was similar to the first time he debuted within AEW. So I thought that was a net negative. But overall, I think they'll build slowly with him, and he seems to be a good first or second main event heel for whoever dethrones MJF. So that's a, you know, 9 months, you know, 10 month story from here to tell with him, which is where I think we are.
Yeah. I think if Jay White had never appeared on AEW TV before, this would have felt bigger. And, you know, they made a big deal out of it when it first happened. They did show a replay of it, you know, a half hour later, roughly, you know, to kind of, you know, emphasize the point. But if it's going to be the announcers framed it as this huge, huge, huge deal, a big part of the crowd popped big for him, you know, and they were sort of the bellwether fans for the people in the audience who didn't know who he was or, you know, might have heard of Jay White, but, you know, aren't invested in him, haven't seen enough of what he's done yet. I would have done more as the show progressed, to talk more about that, make it more part of the conversation by the announcers, maybe even have a couple of the wrestlers who are being interviewed react to it, like really make this a show where, like, you know, Danielson, it's when he's cutting his promos, you know, seems like a little shaken up by it or taken aback by it or makes at least a passing reference to it. MJF makes a passing reference to it. I think you can get a bigger splash for somebody of Jay White's talent and upside by – and I'm not saying they treated it like anything else, but in terms of the amount of time it took and how it was sort of left behind after it happened, I guess, you know, looking at the show now, I would have done more. And in fact, I would have had, you know, Shivani going, we're trying to find Jay White and, you know, we're trying to get word with him. We're trying to get word from Tony Khan. You know, is he signed to a contract or is this an outlaw invading our show? Just turn it into a news story weaved throughout the show. They chose not to do that. It's, you know, I mean, he'll be fine in 4 weeks if they do other good things with him the next three. But I do think we're left thinking this could be the centerpiece story of the show. And it was sort of like, moving on to the next thing other than, like, you know, that 8 second video recap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, that just, you know, watching Tony Khan booking over the last number of years, that just seems like he's, you know, not a top six guy right now for him immediately. And so you don't get that same sort of huge package that you get mentioned by other stars. And if you're not, you know, the way he books is just there, you're in the feud with those teams and no one else mentions you if you're outside of that feud, which is, you know, pro wrestling. But I agree with you 100%. It just felt a little less than, and they'll probably do some retconning when they, you know, if they ever go back and there's a special about his re-debut, they'll probably fluff it a little bit on how epic it actually was compared to what it was in reality.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, there's so many things happen on the show. Let's do an earlier than normal table set introduction here, introduce ourselves, give out the phone numbers, and then we're going to get to emails and phone calls. We've got a couple people who are in the arena tonight who are planning to give us a call, so we'll get some on-site feedback on MJF's song and dance routine, which was bizarre and I thought thoroughly entertaining, but I'm still not quite sure where to place it in my wrestling brain. Tyler, I'm giving you a heads up. I'm going to ask you to make sense of that, or does it not need to make sense? Plus, we'll talk about the FTR Guns match. It's a little clunky, but still had some good moments, and the crowd is into it. And we'll talk about the impact of that, and the you know, the big Wembley Stadium news. Is it August 20? I have the press release. So August 28th.
Yeah, 27th. Yep.
Yep. Everyone, Tyler's got a cold, so forgive him as he struggles sometimes when I throw to him unexpectedly. But he's got his tea, so he'll be good. So, yeah, I mean, lots to talk about here. And then just, I know we got an email on this, but I thought a standout match with Riho and Jamie Hayter, mm-hmm. You know, that deserves some attention. And Sammy Guevara getting extended mic work, a lot of stuff to talk about on the show. So looking forward to it. So let's pause and introduce the show and then move on to those topics. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, April 5th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, 35-plus years of publishing that, along with our website, pwtorch.com, over two decades of publishing news, commentary, live coverage of pay-per-views and TV shows on the web, and also the host of various podcasts, including the Wade Keller Hotline earlier today. In the Wednesday Ask the Editor edition, we brought that back every Wednesday. I answer VIP member questions only and go in-depth on them. We had a lot of questions about WWE. I did a lot of interaction with WWE sources, wrestlers and otherwise, and push back on some of the narratives and headlines out there a little bit for some things that I'm hearing on especially two fronts, and gave some perspective on what people in WWE are bracing for or hoping for Friday, and if it's as unanimous as the internet says it is in terms of what they hope happens. And some insight into the finishes at WrestleMania, which you know, what was planned and what was or wasn't changed. So lots of stuff there, a lot of good content for VIP members, including ad-free editions of this show where we take out the digital ads and the pre-recorded in-house ads, and you just get a streamlined listening experience as a VIP member, and so many other benefits, an ad-free website, 30-plus years of archives of podcasts and newsletters. So check out details. Go VIP. There's so much going on in wrestling right now. We'd love to give you that next tier of our coverage and have you become a subscriber. The place to go is pwtorch.com/govip. There's many ways to sign up. We offer different platforms such as Patreon. You can subscribe directly on your iPhone using your Apple account through the Apple Podcast app. And the way most people do it is through our main website, which we've been doing for a couple decades. And you can sign up with PayPal, credit card, or debit card there, and that gives you access not only to all the VIP podcasts, but also our ad-free website and our library. So check out details, pwtorch.com/govip. All right, moving on from that, let's introduce tonight's co-host. It's Tyler Sage. You can find him every Wednesday night, or almost every Wednesday night, Tyler, covering AEW Dynamite on pwtorch.com, his reports alongside mine. So if you're reading my report and you think, well, that was a crazy opinion, Wade should have said something different about that. Maybe Tyler did. So you can create a couple tabs, bounce back and forth, and get two different perspectives on the same program. Tyler, active with the PW Torch YouTube channel also, does some VIP podcasting in other realms. Tyler, welcome to the co-host chair.
Hey, thanks for having me. I would say, unfortunately, you and I have similar opinions on wrestling, I would say.
That's true.
We typically agree. I think we're harder core on different things that are important to us. But yeah, so I don't know how much change we're getting, but, you know, you'll at least get some more snarkiness from mine than yours is you know, I think yours is approval of a journalist as yourself, and mine is a man of the people, I would say, is the way to read mine. So, yes, but thank you for having me, as always.
You shifted the sales pitch a little, but it's still a sales pitch. So I'll go with it. That's good. That's funny. Very good. Okay, so if you want to join the program and you want to be part of the show tonight and you're live streaming our show at wadekellerpostshow.com, we invite you to do so. The phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That plays you on the switchboard, lets us know you want to be on the show, and then we can bring you on. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. I know a lot of you are, you know, watching AEW All Access during our post show, or you're watching some Netflix show and you're listening to our post show later that night or the next day, the next morning. But that doesn't mean you can't be part of the show. That email is a way for you to give your thoughts, ask questions, and be part of the show, and then you can listen back to it instead of live streaming the show. So if you are listening to us after downloading the show and not listening to the live stream, please consider yourself invited to participate with the with emails. All right. So I think with that business out of the way, we can get rolling. And Chris from Oklahoma is our first caller up, a VIP member on our VIP Express reservation line. Chris, you're at the front of the line. Thank you for your VIP membership. And what's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Well, I was watching the MJF promo, in UFC, the craziest promoter I've ever seen in my life. But I was curious, Ken, do you think it works that they have MJF cheered in his hometown or a hometown hero cheered in his hometown, even if he is a heel? I mean, does it works, but can it be sustained that way?
I think, okay, here's my answer. I don't think it works. I think it complicates things. I think it's counterproductive, and yet I still love it, and I think it's kind of worth doing. And I can't reconcile that contradiction of opinion at all. But, I mean, it got him into trouble. You know, seeing MJF be this cool guy, he's gracious at the city hall, getting the key to the city, and he's giving good advice to kids. He's throwing a teacher under the bus who deserves it if he's telling the truth. He's saying things about Sammy Guevara that are true. And the crowd's cheering him, and he's a good dancer and singer, and he's got this throwback to the big band era. It's just like all these cool, nice things about him. And it is weird if the goal is for him to be cheered the other 51 weeks out of the year and in front of all the other crowds. I probably would say I would probably decide against it if it was my call, but I'm not sure it'd be the right call because we'd miss out on this sort of Long Island bizarro world. That is, it's become sort of this event when they're in Long Island. You're like, well, what's MJF going to do? What's he going to say? How's he going to be different? I'm not too often this contradictory and this torn, but every instinct says don't do it. And then there's part of me that's just like, even if it does some damage, it's sort of maybe worth it. So, Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree as well. I think, you know, AEW asks you as a fan to fill in the gaps a lot of the time. It doesn't give you things explicitly. There's lots of long-term stories that involve a lot of EVPs, for example, that ask you to, you know, go that next level and either add the story or look at the shoulder content. And to me, if you're going to do that with this, I think just Long Island is a heel character within AEW, right? Like like you said, the bizarro world, they're that. And if you're going to do this, I think MJF doing what he did tonight, you know, the song and dance with Jericho was, you know, I think liked by a certain segment of the audience. I loved it, for example. I also loved tonight. But I think your general wrestling fan is like not into big band music and finds this to be grating and annoying. So he accomplished getting cheered, but also just looking like a pompous, you know, heel to the general audience. And I think it worked that he was so full of himself and the you know, he was there with the supervisor of Oyster Bay, I think was his official title, which that guy, you know, I'm not alleging anything, but he looked like a guy who would take a handout as a politician and the crowd booed him. That was like him along with that.
Your opinions of Tyler Sage are only Tyler Sage's, and please don't.
Just hypothetical.
Throwing out these crazy allegations without any backing. Oh, my God. But you're totally right.
But
he does look that
way. Yeah, but like putting him on that picture, you can see like from the video package, like they're going to be able to make him a heel easily. So I like that as opposed to him just coming out there and totally 180ing his character. He's more being a heel, but he's just getting cheered for it. He's doing the same sort of thing he would do in, you know, LA last week and get booed the whole time for it. So I like the strategy if you're going to do it.
Yeah. Chris, how'd you feel?
Yeah. It was over the top, but you know, I felt the same way as you. I was like torn. I'm like, wait, is he a heel? He's a face. He's a heel. Okay. I'm enjoying this. So what the heck, you know, let's go with it. But it was overall, it was entertaining. Don't get me wrong. I didn't know he could sing like that either, you know. But it was very entertaining. But the other thing I was curious of was, were you surprised that they put the FTR and Guns match on regular TV for a main event?
I'm not surprised they put it. Why would they not put it? You think it should be safer? No, I don't think it reaches that level where you're like, wow, this should be safe for a pay-per-view. I mean, Dynamite's important to them, and it's a good match to put on TV, but it seemed like it was ripe, you know, to be on television at this time with where the Guns are and you know, all the speculation about FTR's future. And so Yeah, I mean, it absolutely would be fine on a pay-per-view. I mean, don't get me wrong. And I don't think it's below a pay-per-view quality, but it's not – it doesn't feel to me like a match that you just should be saving or you're getting less out of it, like a last opportunity. Tyler, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think if this story would have – you know, if they would have been able to come back and it's, you know, May 15th and you do this at the pay-per-view, I think it totally works. But just the circumstance and the timeline – to do it here in this way, and obviously it was planned for the Guns to be transitional champions. So you didn't have FTR doing this to the Acclaimed. But, yeah, I think it, you know, like I said, the main event of Dynamite is, you know, it can be more important than, you know, the third match on a pay-per-view. And that's where I think this would have been. So, and to get, you know, more eyeballs on the Dynamite pay-per-view for the Guns, I think is more important. So, yeah, I think this totally fit and fit the tradition of Dynamite main events being more often than not pretty important matches going on.
Yeah, yeah. Chris, go ahead. Yep.
One more thing. What is your thoughts on them going to London?
Yeah, big. I mean, that's a big deal. That's a big stadium. Mm-hmm. I don't think they know what they're going to draw. I mean, I skimmed over the press release during Dynamite while I was covering the show. And, you know, the one of the quotes is, the announcement comes on the heels of AEW's tremendous growth in TV viewership in the UK, with AEW programming serving as the highest ratings driver for men. And I love this demo, 16 to 34 on IT. I mean, it's just two demos different there, I guess, or they just found a good slice to grab onto. But on ITV4, since the start of 2022, AEW reached 2.8 million men on ITV platforms in 2022. And began by, in 2023, increasing that reach by another 45% among the 16 to 34 demo. I don't know what reaching men on ITV platforms means. So I guess I want to get some clarification on that. I don't know if they're counting people twice or what it is. So that's a little unclear. But obviously there's, you know, history with AEW with their Fulham Football Club in that building. And they had, you know, the press release touts that the Khan family's Fulham football team earned a promotion to the English Premier League with playoff wins at Wembley Stadium in 2018 and 2020. So, they've actually played, they're going to be playing an NFL game there in 2023, the Jacksonville Jaguars. So a lot of connections there. I'm really curious to hear from our UK listeners and readers of our website and about what kind of publicity and what they think. If they think this is overly ambitious for AEW, or if they think it's going to be like, you know, a surefire sellout, or, you know, somewhere in between. But I'm not even clear on whether it's going to be available to watch outside of the stadium. The press release does not say that. And I don't know if this affects All Out either. So more, you know, I won't say more questions than answers, but certainly the announcement is a big deal, but it's not entirely clear to the world what this means. But tickets go tickets go on sale May 5th, but they have pre-registration going on before that, and there'll be details on that. So, Tyler, what's your reaction to the announcement, and also just the way it was announced? It was cool that Nigel McGuinness joined the broadcast team and got to be the person to interview Tony about that, and then we had Adam Cole step in again, just like he did for AEW All Access, and add a little bit of detail.
Yeah, it's huge. You kind of hit everything that I was wondering, especially with All Out, is this taking place of that, or is this just a big house show? If it's a big house show, are they, you know, Wembley is 90,000 seats. So we are talking like bigger than SoFi Stadium with the, you know, if you have the field. So that's quite ambitious. And also the one thing I'm thinking of is, you know, Money in the Bank's at the O2 Arena, which is a 20,000 seat auditorium. Yeah. So this, as much as anything, feels like a measuring contest, if you will, for Tony Khan and WWE, that he booked a stadium just, you know, a month later than WWE. I feel like that is a big part of this huge announcement as well from the AEW side, as a big weekend for WWE and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it's huge. I'm, again, very curious, like you said, to hear about the UK audience, which I know is very strong for the Torch. And I think it should sell well. I mean, it's a huge fan base for wrestling over there in general, but to get over there in this moment, I personally hope this is the taking place for All Out as a fan and not a house show, because I just don't think that's going to sell well and do well for the company if you do it that way. But we'll see. I could be wrong.
Yeah, it's so close to when All Out would be, and yeah. there's you know, how can you sell tens of thousands of tickets for a show that is where the main events are split between that and All Out? So, and maybe that information is out there and I haven't seen it, but it's not in the, you know, it wasn't made clear. It's not in the press release. I know people on Twitter asking about it. So, if anybody listening live knows the answer, you can drop us an email too. I texted a couple people in AEW, after the announcement to find out, haven't heard back from anyone. So, we'll see. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited about the idea of AEW, you know, putting on a mega show in front of UK fans. I think they are, however many there are, they're going to all turn out. You know what I mean? That is going to be a destination event, and that stadium is just, you know, there's such history there, and you know, they have the whole summer to promote it. So yeah, I mean, well, it's going to be, everyone's going to learn, you know, what AEW's drawing power is, and what the drawing power is of AEW's top stars at that time. So yeah, let's see them put on a super show like this, and let's see what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, anything else you want to say before we move on?
Nothing else. Thank you, Wade. Thank you, Tyler.
Cool.
Appreciate it.
Great.
Thank you.
Great topics, Chris. Thanks. All right, let's bring on Mark, who is on site tonight on Long Island, or as MJF said, in Long Island. Mark, welcome.
Hi, Wade. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry if the sound's a little bad. I'm driving home from the show, so hopefully you can hear me well.
Yeah, you're fine. Yeah, be safe. Safety first.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. What stood out tonight to you as a fan of the building? Like, what's going to be your top memory from the show tonight? I feel like there's kind of an ensemble of possibilities.
There's a lot of things. Notably, number one, this is my third time being at UBS on Long Island at AEW, and I feel like always MJF is always the star of the show. He's always the most over, whether he is supposed to be the heel or the face. He's just always the most bombastic and enthusiastic and charismatic person on the show. And it seems to show, and the crowd in Long Island loves him because he's MJF and he's from Long Island.
Let's pause there. Talk about the crowd reaction to this big band song performance and singing from MJF, because that takes guts to go out there and do what he did. The crowd shots look like the crowd was into it, and a lot of people are just smiling at the spectacle. So just kind of describe, I've never had to interview somebody about, you know, ask somebody, you know, about this before, a wrestler breaking out into a big band song and dance routine like he's on the Ed Sullivan show circa 1967 or something. But yeah, kind of tell me about the mood in the building and how the guys.
I've never been to a wrestling show where there's been a big band song and dance or a spectacle like this. I don't know if they were going for, like, okay, we had WrestleMania this week, so we have to do something big because it's MJF and he's in Long Island. But I feel like the screen rose for the band to appear, and there was a big pop for that. And then then they started playing, and he came out, and yeah, for whatever reason, MJF is mega over in Long Island. And I feel like that just overtook any question that they had of why this was happening or what was happening. But as far as they were concerned, if MJF was involved in it, it was okay and it was amazing to them. That's the best explanation I can give for it.
That makes sense. I mean, it is. I don't quite know where that segment goes in my wrestling brain, but I was smiling while watching it, you know?
Same with me. I'm not a fan of musicals or, you know, early. Yes.
Yeah. Tyler, jump in with a question for Mark.
Yeah, so on that same subject, when the politician was talking, I couldn't make it out watching, but what was the crowd chanting at him? There was like, was it lower taxes? Or I just had to know, since you were there live. What was the chant going on there?
It was something about either no more. Yes, it was no more taxes. No more taxes. No more taxes.
No more taxes. Okay. Very funny.
Yes,
I said thank you for clarifying that.
Who's going to plow the street if there's no taxes?
I would say of everyone
gonna pick the
involved
pot.
In the show, that guy probably got the most heat. And, he got the most heat of anyone on the show.
That is very funny. Speaking of heat or lack thereof, I want to ask about Sammy Guevara and his match. You know, I think got a similar response from the crowd, but just give your impression and then the crowd's overall feel for him on the mic for that prolonged period of time. And, you know, did that work for you? Do you think that worked in the crowd? So just that whole segment.
I don't think it worked in general. He got some heat because it was someone talking who wasn't MJF, but I don't feel that he is a main event position, and I feel like a lot of people in the arena realize that as well. Like, they don't recognize him as, all right, he's going to be a main eventer at this point, and that he's going to be in what seems to be like a four-way main event at the next pay-per-view. Like, I don't think that he's resonating with the crowd as a main eventer.
It's awkward when you have a heel out there making good points about a heel who's a babyface in this town after having a dazzling match. I'm as entertained by MJF, but like I like when things just sort of get back to normal. And I think if you have too many things that are sort of outside of normal, it can throw things off. I feel that way about Blackpool Combat Club now too. It's like nobody's buying Bryan Danielson as this guy. They know he's. It's like, you know, Tom Martin's talking about Edge. You know, like, nobody buys Edge. It's just like, we know who Bryan Danielson is. He can't just arbitrarily decide, it'll be more fun to be heel, so I'm going to be heel. And everybody wants to cheer Moxley and Claudio, too. There's a headwind there. And so now, like, you're creating this weird dynamic with MJF as a babyface. He's taking shots at Sammy Guevara. But Sammy's using lines against MJF that would work in every other town to make Sammy a babyface and MJF a heel. But they're both heels, and there's two other babyfaces, one of whom was put in a position to get booed after, you know, sneak symboling and bursting MJF's eardrums from behind, which is a very mean thing to do. Don't do that, people. It's sort of all over the place. And so I look forward to next week when things settle down again. But this, I think this just kind of created a little bit of chaos when it comes to where people's sympathies lie and who they're rooting for. Because you can't help but nod along to a lot of what Guevara says. Look, I just had this great dazzling match, and I do something MJF doesn't do, which is wrestle. And a bunch of people are cheering Guevara. Is that what you really want? Enough about that.
Yeah. Wade, if
Mark,
I can use
about,
that transition. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, Wade. If I can use that transition,
no,
I would
ahead.
Say that Blackpool Combat Club, you know, Moxley's music does not help with them and their heel transition because their music hit and, you know, everyone popped and they were very happy. I would say I have a question for you. Was their full entrance live on the TV? Because it seems that at some point the music started playing again, and like I felt like they were in a commercial, but I wasn't 100% sure.
Yeah, so they started the Wild Thing intro through the crowd before going to a break. They went to a split-screen break, and so we heard commercials but watched them. And then they came back from the break, and it was the tail end of the ring entrance, and then they just attacked the jobbers. So, Tyler, is that your memory? Is that match your memory of it?
Yep, that's 100% right.
Yep. So it makes sense they had to restart the music because they were gone. You know, they were out at a commercial for so long.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Also, fun fact, those three, let's call them enhancement talents, were also on Dark Elevation in a three-way match as well. So that's they had already appeared earlier today.
Well, that is hardly fair to make them wrestle twice. No wonder Black
Yeah,
Atomic
I mean,
board. They had opponents who aren't already wrestling.
Exactly. Yes.
Mark, I want to get a sense of the pop for Jay White when he came out. And obviously there was a pop. I mean, there was, people were like, yes, who knew who he was? Did like 90% know who he was? Was it more like 30%? Did you get a sense of that?
Real quick for you, I tried to avoid the internet while I was there. Is he officially All Elite, or has there been that announcement that he's All Elite, or...
I You know, good question. The way the announcers talked about him and saying he's hottest free agent, he's landed in AEW, the implication is this is not just another guest appearance.
Okay.
However, I don't know that he got the Jay White is All Elite Twitter graphic. Did he?
Yeah, he has not. He has not yet.
Yeah.
I'm
yep.
on
so,
their Twitter.
So, it's unofficial, and maybe they want us wondering that.
Okay. So he did get a gigantic pop. I would say it's probably like
breaking
the
news. Hold on. Nope. Mark. Sorry. Mark, breaking news. 2 hours ago, Tony Khan tweeted Jay White is All Elite. So, I scrolled up far enough. So, breaking news, 2 hours ago. Everybody else knows.
Okay. That makes more sense. But, yes, he did get a gigantic pop. Everyone, or at least most of the audience, seemed to know who he was. I honestly wasn't looking forward to the Juice and Ricky Starks match. I'm a fan of Ricky Starks. I feel like they haven't done enough to establish Juice in AEW. So, like, I really wasn't looking forward to the match. So I was actually a little relieved when Jay White showed up and they had that angle. And I, you know, obviously it seems like they're going to lean towards a Jay White versus Ricky Starks match at some point in the future. But, yeah, he got Jay White got a big pop. There was a lot of holy S chants. And I think overall it was a more successful angle than I was anticipating as, you know, more than that match that was advertised.
Maybe you said, and I glazed over, did you say what kind of percentage of the crowd you think were, like, leaped up and like, oh, my God, that's Jay White versus people going, what's going on here, and maybe not knowing who he was?
I would say the majority. There was a lot of – there was a big cheer when he came out. You know, there's a lot of – there was a big holy S chant, and like I said, I was not looking forward to that match to begin with. Opposite of, like, how you guys feel – how you normally feel about, you know, Raw when they advertise a match – and they don't fulfill it, I feel like this was a better scenario than that.
Well, I mean, you would think a ticket-buying crowd for AEW Dynamite is going to have you would think they'd have a high percentage of fans who not only know who Jay White is, but are really excited to see him show up, with the idea being, you know, they know he's a free agent, and this isn't just him stopping by because he's in the country. That wouldn't surprise me. And then the key for AEW is, you know, make sure they know there's a bunch of people out there who need to be introduced to who he is and why he's special, and you know, cater to them in addition to the ardent, savvy, international, well-informed fans who already know what he brings. Tyler, back to you for anything you want to ask of Mark.
Yeah, just I want to talk about the main event. Just, you know, the FTR winning, where was that throughout the night on the level of pop? You know, was it just under MJF or, you know, some under Jay White, just on that tier list? And then... to me, that was a very WrestleMania-esque with the near falls, et cetera. So did that work with the live crowd? Did people seem to be on the edge of their seat that FTR was going to, you know, be leaving AEW? So just that whole main event, your perspective, the crowd's perspective.
Yeah, I think the crowd was definitely into it. The crowd definitely popped. I would say it's probably – MJF was, like, definitely one. Jay White, I would say, is maybe two. And then FTR winning is three. I kind of had a feeling – that FDR was going to win just because of all the quote-unquote insider stuff that they were throwing out. And I just had a feeling they were going to win based on the guns winning, and I didn't think it was going to be a long title reign. But let me ask you, I went to the restroom right before the match began. Did the guns come out to a 50 Cent song?
Did they air on TV? It was not their normal song. So whatever song you heard is that's the song they aired, which is interesting for sure, because it was not their normal entrance music.
There's a 50 Cent song called Many Men, and as I was walking back, that's what was playing. I was very confused as I walked back into the arena, because FDR was already in their ring and that song was playing. I was just like, what is going on here? But I guess that makes sense in some way.
We'll see if they keep it. I mean, obviously, Tony Khan loves the licensed songs, and that's a good omen for a group to be there. So, Wade, back to you.
Yeah, well, Mark, you mentioned the Dark Elevation tapings beforehand. Anything stand out there that you want to pass along?
Wade, there's a lot of Dark Elevation matches. I will say that if anyone listened to the recent Rene Paquette podcast with Mox, Marie Shafir teamed with Nyla Rose, and Marie Shafir was not wearing boots. There was a match with the Dark Order, and Johnny Silver and Ryan, not Ryan Reynolds, I'm blanking out his name. Reynolds,
Alex.
They're both from Long Island.
Alex Reynolds.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yes. They both got popped because they're from Long Island. There's the Japanese female, I want to say Miko something, who's very popular. She had a match. Sorry, I can't remember her name. There was, like I said, there was a lot of Dark Elevation matches.
How long did the Elevation matches go on before, like, when did they start? Did you get there early enough to see them all?
Yeah, so I actually got there when, long story short, I got there when doors opened, and they started the Elevation tapings, like, I want to say 10 to 7 on the East Coast, and then they ran through until, like, a quarter to 8. So there was a ton of matches. I know that the Butcher of the Blade and the English guy who can't get over, but he used to wear a box on his head. They had a triple threat match against some a trio of Japanese fellas. And, like, the Japanese fellas were, like, amazing, but the Butcher of the Blade and the other guy won. there's so many matches, I can't even. they fit a lot into that hour.
Back to Dynamite. Talk about the Jamie Hayter Riho match and how that got over with the crowd, because it for a match between two babyface teams, the crowd just seemed to really be into the match. The match earned their investment in it.
Yes. So thank you for reminding me about that. So personally, I don't understand I don't get Rio because, like, there's no character to her. She's, like, had no appeal, but every time she's in a match, she seems to win the crowd over. And they played a couple of videos before the match actually started. Like, before the whole event started, like, she's trying to hype the matches for Dynamite. And one of those was for that match, and it was, like, an interview with her, and she was speaking Japanese, and, like, that subtitles, and like, you know, that Jamie, like, saying, like, oh, this Wednesday I'm going to beat you. But once that match got started, I don't think anyone was really looking forward to it, but it ended up being a tremendous match, and then the crowd really got into it. Towards the end, it was like, this is awesome chant, and, you know, they really, the crowd really got into it towards, like, the last, like, half of the match.
Yeah, that came across on TV. How about Hook? Mm-hmm. What kind of reception did Hook get? Because, I mean, man, a year and a half ago, or, you know, a little over a year and 4 months ago, he was red hot. Where is he now as far as that goes?
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure a year and a half ago, like, I want to say maybe I was in UBS November of a year and a half ago. And it was, like, his debut match, and he was super hot. He was super over. This time, it was not as much, you know. Did you guys see Ethan Page came out beforehand and started, like, you know, degrading the crowd and talking smack about them? Was that aired, or I'm assuming not?
No, that was commercial break. We didn't get his ring entrance.
Yeah, he came out. He just started, like, degrading the crowd, saying Long Island sucks and all that type of things, and then Hook came out, and, yeah. But, you know, the pop that Hook got did not compare to what he got a year and a half ago when he first debuted.
What do you think of the flow of the show once Dynamite started? You know, speaking of, you know, what happens during commercial breaks and stuff, I mean, generally people just don't go, even the live experience, it's pretty nonstop. Did the show seem to flow, and was there at any point a low point where they lost the crowd a little bit?
It actually flowed pretty good. There was a couple times where I didn't know what happened. There was definitely the only point I really recognized that there was a break was when the Malakai Black. What's the name?
House of Black.
They came out. Yeah, they came out, and then it clearly went to a commercial break before the other team came out. That was really the only point where you noticed that it was a break.
Wow. Yeah, good deal.
Let me ask you, what happened? After Jay White came out, what actually happened? Because did you see the Jericho and Keith Lee segment? Yeah, that wasn't clear. Like we weren't sure if that like actually came across on TV. Thank you.
Yeah, which is interesting development. I'm curious. I'm not sure how I feel about a Keith Lee Chris Jericho match yet, and Keith Lee's current physical, you know, the condition that he seems to be wrestling in lately, and then Jericho and not necessarily being at his prime carrying someone like him. I hate to say that about Keith Lee, but that's sort of been an issue lately is just his mobility, and cardio. So yeah, that's gonna if they go one on one, I'm curious to see how that turns out. I hope it's good.
Keith Lee got a pop, but like he just looked terrible. Like I don't know how else to explain it. Like I don't know what this haircut is supposed to be like with the gray hair, but he just looks absolutely terrible.
He's not presenting himself as a peak physical professional athlete at these days. And, you know, that's been an increasing issue, I think, which is, you know, kind of slowed him down. It slowed down his push and slowed down his work in the ring. And his work in the ring was what got him over more than anything, not just him standing there and talking. So the other ingredient is pretty important for him to be over and as useful as I think they wanted him to be. But I don't think anyone would be surprised at how the trajectory of how things have gone with him. So they were taping ROH afterwards, but you obviously left before that. Did they hype that? Did they get the crowd, trying to convince people like you, Mark, to stay? And what was their sales pitch?
So, Tony came out beforehand. He gave his rah-rah speech. Like, he thanked everyone for coming. He asked, like, who has been here before, who has been to the Grand Slam, who watched Supercard of Honor. And then he said, you know, whoever is interested, he's like, we're going to have an amazing card tonight, especially after the show. We're going to have a Ring of Honor taping. And I don't think I've seen a Ring of Honor taping since 2006. So I just, you know, I didn't have an interest in staying until, you know, 11 plus. So I got out of there.
Yep.
But they did. Justin Roberts said it a couple times during Dark Elevation. Dasha was the ring announcer, and she mentioned it a couple times. So they tried. They tried real hard, but it didn't work for me.
Well, did they push certain talent or certain matches as like a specific hook?
No, they didn't announce any matches or any talent. They just said, you know, stay for Ring of Honor. Yeah, that was, you know, they
yeah,
said,
that's weird.
Maybe it's just we're in New York, so if they said like Eddie Kingston was going to be there, you know, that probably would have hooked some more people. But they didn't hook anybody.
Tyler, anything you want to ask Mark before we let him go?
I don't think so. Yes, my always questions.
Great.
So yeah, that's interesting. They didn't even promote the main event or anything to sell the show. Usually, with Rampage, at least you know what the main event's going to be throughout the show. So that's very interesting. I think that's it. But you really made me laugh with your Kip Sabian comment there, Mark, so I appreciate that.
Oh, yes, Kip Sabian, thank you.
We're here for you.
Before I hang up, I will say this. I got there really early. As I was waiting in the concourse, there was a lot of talk over Cody Rhodes and WrestleMania. There's a lot of talk over Vince McMahon and Monday Night. There was a random. So my fiance was supposed to join me, but because it's Passover, she was not able to. So this is the first time I ever went to a wrestling show alone, and I didn't want to waste the ticket. And I just listened to what was going on in the audience. there's a lot of, there's a lot of WWE talk. There's a lot of, like, what's going on with the Elite and Hangman. There was a random conversation that involved Ezekiel Jackson just because I heard that name. But, yeah.
Who had that on their bingo card?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Intercontinental Champion himself.
But, yeah. Also, I just want to mention, during the Dark Elevation, Big Bill and Lee Moriarty had a tag team match. And Big Bill, as stupid as the name is, he's in phenomenal shape. And I feel like Vince McMahon is twiddling his mustache somewhere, saying, oh, why do we do anything with him? But, like, he looks phenomenal. Right now.
Cool. Well, Mark, thanks so much. Really. Oh, go ahead, Mark. No.
I had a chance to stop the merch stand. There was like a local, like, I was there T-shirt. Then there was an Acclaim T-shirt. The Scissor Hands. There was Danhausen mask. There was a calendar. There was an MGF T-shirt. Some action figures. And the Elite flag. There's definitely more booths for merchandise than there was the last time I was there, which I feel like is probably a good sign, because every time I listen to other correspondents, they're like, oh, the merch thing is terrible, there's only one place. So I feel like they're maybe learning and working on improving that.
Well, you would think when the revenue comes in and it's better because there's more choices, that would be all the incentive they need. But listening to the RNSI correspondence, that's been a...
Yeah, I will say my fiance asked me to go grab her T-shirt after the fact, and then I went back, and a lot of stuff was sold out. So either it's working or, it was really good sales in New York.
Yeah. All right. Well, Mark, thanks again so much. Good thorough report. Really appreciate you taking time to call us.
Yeah, not a problem. Thank you, Wade. I will contribute to the making Wade feel uncomfortable train that's been going on lately, and I appreciate all the work you do.
Mm-hmm.
If I wasn't getting married in October, I would go VIP, but I'm trying to save any cent I can. But anyone else should go VIP. And Tyler, I thank you for the YouTube channel and all the things you contribute to there. And thank you both, and you do everyone on Torch does just such a great job at everything they do, and I truly appreciate it.
Mark, thanks. Appreciate you
sending
us such kind words. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem. Thank you for make you feel uncomfortable, Wade.
I appreciate it. All right. Take care, Mark.
Have a good night. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, you too. If you want to be an on-site correspondent like Mark just was, drop us a line. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Just put the name of the city and the date in the subject line, and let us know you're attending a show and want to join us and fill us in on your in-person experience. And then I'll be in touch. And it's always fun to hear the in-arena perspective. You can still call us, 347-215-8558. If you call, push 1. We also have Frank Pediani, PW Torch, VIP podcaster and contributor, coming up in a few minutes. He is in the building right now. He stayed for some of the ROH taping, so we'll get some perspective from him on that. So that'll be fun. In the meantime, I do want to get to David Wolf from Washington, D.C., who emailed and said, I guess we're supposed to admire Hangman Page for his grit, but to me, he came off as a complete idiot, confronting the BCC 4-on-1. Dumb baby faces get what they deserve. No sympathy from me. It was kind of weird. And I kept waiting for someone to run out. Have Dark Order decided he's not worth running out for? What story are they telling? Because I'm kind of with David on this one. Like, why are you supposed to – I mean, Hangman wasn't run – I don't know. I mean, if he had some connection to the wrestler who's getting beat up, I guess we just have to be – like, look at him as honorable because he came to the defense of some jobbers or whatever, but I don't know. It's not, if you bring a squirt gun to a house fire, I mean, you're not really a hero. And I mean, in essence, that's what's going on here in a 1-on-4, as David points out. Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you want to do the debate club thing where I take the opposite side, even though I agree with you, it would be that, you know, Danielson's whole thing is that everyone's an amateur but them, and Hangman coming out showed a, you know, amateur attitude to not, you know, keep the, you know, whatever. I think that's the angle they're going for. Did it work? No, I don't think it did. And to me, it A, made him look like a dumb baby face, which is the worst kind of baby face, as we saw a lot in WWE, you know, about 2 years ago. It seemed like every baby face was a dumb baby face, which is hard to cheer for. But the other thing that it, from like a meta perspective for me, was like, it just showed how obvious that, you know, Kenny, the Bucks, Adam Cole, like nobody was actually there at the building that, you know, tonight. And to like exemplify that even more so without saying like, oh yeah, you know, the commentator saying the Bucks are injured or where's Kenny, you know, not even to like ask those questions, at least that I heard, didn't help Hangman either. So I think there were better ways to do this angle. Maybe if he got attacked somewhere else throughout the show, that would make sense. To kind of keep this simmering, which I do like that they have kept it week in and week out that the Combat Club are attacking the Elite guys. So that's the point. But yeah, overall, it just made Hangman look stupid. And that is not what that character needs, because he's ebbed and flowed a lot. And a bad week takes two good weeks to kind of recover, in my opinion, for that character.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's go to another email here. All right, so email on Jay White's debut. This is from – he sent a follow-up email, so it's slowing me down here. Oh, Alex from Montreal. Okay, he didn't sign the first email, that's why. Hey, Wade, technical flubs aside, like messing up, capturing Jay White's debut and some overly frenetic camera work during the Matt Hardy belt spot and follow-up, I felt like Dynamite after Mania was a statement episode for AEW. Great and uncanny pro wrestling matches with the likes of Jamie and Riho, Sammy and Commander, the Gun, and the Gun's getting me to believe for at least a half a second in the main event. I love the MJF segment, and I'm consistently amazed at his confidence and verbal execution. Also, after that musical number, it's fair to say Riho's not the only one with pipes in AEW. Pause for chuckle or groan, your choice. All right, so we're pausing. Okay. Anyway, the biggest things coming out of this show is the All In and Wembley announcement. It's a massive gamble, considering the stadium can hold around 90K, and that WWE packed over 80K for Bret versus Bulldog in 92. That said, given that AEW is basically founded on a bet, Tony taking a big gamble on a stadium show is pretty fitting. I want the show to be a massive success and for it to be a landmark moment in the company's growth. Given that it's the first show outside of North America and the hunger for pro wrestling in the UK, how successful do you see this being? Is 50K too optimistic, or should we settle for 30K and call it a day? It's all guesswork, but I'm wondering what you think and how you feel about All In becoming AEW's WrestleMania. Okay, so number of things thrown out there. One, I did like Tony Khan comparing it to the gamble of All In. You know, I mean, to call it All In, it's appropriate. You know, it's not just bringing back an old title. You know, it was kind of the pre-AEW launch of AEW. Mm-hmm. So to say, yeah, we gambled to see if we could sell 10,000 tickets. Now we're gambling to see if we can sell a respectable 35 or 60, or are they, what are they really hoping for? Like, I don't know what Tony's expectation is and what their metrics, what their data tells them about what their popularity is. I think ticket pricing is going to be really interesting. And there's different schools of thought on whether you should charge a lot for those, you know, well, I shouldn't say that. Most people agree. You charge a lot for the best seats, and then very little if you can't fill the stadium. Otherwise, very little for the last rows, just to get people on a budget to feel they can be there if you're really looking for the spectacle of the crowd. But, I mean, you know, world-class championship wrestling out of Dallas in the 80s ran Texas Stadium and the Cotton Bowl, and they had good crowds, but, man, were there a lot of empty seats, too. And, you know, to the point where, you know, Bill Mercer on commentary would say, there's a traffic jam outside the stadium, and that fans are still filing in. And, of course, it, you know, there wasn't, and it didn't, but they were sort of embarrassed by the optics. There's a lot more sophistication in terms of camera angles and which tickets you sell first and how you stage the building. They can certainly, you know, shift seats if they need to and have, you know, half the stadium set up with the entrance stage in the middle, so it becomes a 45-seat venue or a 35-seat venue, and it looked, you know, really good, but you can't really do the helicopter shot or, you know, above and show the full arena. But I don't think they should be ashamed if it's only, quote, only half full. I do not have even – I don't feel I have an educated guess on what they can draw. I mean, there's just no precedent for it, and it's so ambitious. As far as All In becoming AEW's WrestleMania, I don't think it should be. I think AEW shouldn't – doing a novelty stadium show that looks like you're betting big on yourself, but you don't know how it's going to turn out, I think is the spirit of calling it All In. But if it's not on pay-per-view and they still do All Out, then, you know, it doesn't feel like it's becoming their WrestleMania. So, Tyler, your thoughts on the points that Alex made.
Yeah. You know, just trying to run them down now. You know, I guess I'm more bullish on the I guess you didn't give a number, so I guess I can't.
No,
say
I'm
more
bullish, I was going to say you're more bullish than me.
I mean, that's a ravenous fan base, you know. I mean, again, a lot of support for the Torch comes from UK and overseas. But
well, what's your over-under?
Yeah.
60? Or do you think they can fill it? Or, you know,
I think they have to do at least 50, or else we're really talking a disappointment. And how do you do that? Do you paper it? Do you have cheap tickets? Do you have three, you know, quote unquote dream matches that, you know, I don't know what those would even be at this point, but is that MJF versus somebody that you actually think MJF's going to lose? And that's like a big, you know, save AEW moment. And you build a whole show around that. Is there enough UK talent that you can get for that show that moved the needle enough? There's lots of questions like that. But, you know, well, I don't know the population of, you know, Britain, Scotland, and Northern Ireland, and Ireland as well, and Wales. But, you know, 45, 50K, or 50 million, somewhere in that range. So that's a lot of people to pull from.
Did you just say 50 million?
And the population.
Oh, population.
Of like the UK.
Oh, I thought you were.
Yeah.
I thought you were predicting 50 million in attendance, and I was going to give you a hard time.
No.
Flip up.
Definitely not.
It is a densely populated area that they are drawing from, for sure. Yeah. And certainly some people are going to want to make that an excuse to visit. You know, also in fly ends.
Yeah. Well, yeah, beside the point, I'm going the latter half of September. So I was very disappointed by the date was given because I was almost there naturally. So,
Well,
I'll talk to the locals afterwards. I'll report back, people that have gone, I'm sure I'll meet there. But, I think that would be the case. And I'm at a loss for you, the other points on the show here that the emailer made. So if any you want me to go through quickly, let me know, but
yeah, no, that's fine.
Okay.
I mean,
cool.
We'll get to another email here. David Wolf also emailed back, and he said, I want to bring up, and I see this on Twitter too, I want to bring up a subject related to Wembley Stadium, CM Punk. I frankly don't believe AEW is in a position to run a successful stadium show, and making this announcement a few days after WrestleMania in Los Angeles is almost laughable. I don't think Adam Cole versus MJF will cut it, or War Games, or an anarchy in the arena between the Elite and the BCC. The only wrestler on the AEW roster who's potentially a stadium draw is CM Punk. So a few questions. Wembley Stadium has a listed capacity for 90,000. For an impressive visual, how many fans need to be in attendance? I think with, you know, particular camera angles, you can make 35,000 look really good. What number do you consider a success? I don't know. Can they sell a realistic do you believe they have a realistic chance to sell many tickets without Punk on the card? Can they reach a big number without Punk? Why is Tony even trying this in 2023, considering the state of the company and the inevitable comparisons with the enormous success of WWE Stadium shows, both in the U.S. and overseas these past few months? So thanks again. So we covered a lot of that, but the CM Punk thing is interesting. Is Tony Khan circling that date as the return of CM Punk? And does playing up, I mean, having him, do CM Punk against Moxley? Do you do CM Punk against MJF in a rematch? Do Punk versus Hangman Page, you know, there's a Punk versus Jericho, Punk versus Kenny. There's all these like semi shoot. Is it going to be a real fight? You know, things you can do. Can Tony give a talk? You know, has he been able to pull aside one of those top guys who aren't crazy about Punk, or that's making it soft, who despise him and don't want him back? can Tony pull them aside and go, hey, I'm your boss. We're paying you well. You got to be a professional. I wouldn't ask you to do it if we're just, you know, going to some normal city in the U.S., but this is a big gamble for our company, and we really need this to be big, and therefore I need you to figure out how to be a professional with Punk. There's possible some people in that locker room would say no to that and gamble on what the reaction would be, but maybe somebody would say yes. Punk would help draw. I mean, Tyler, Punk, you know, I don't know if Punk lost some of his drawing power because of how he acted at the All Out media Q&A, or if because he's been injured twice and, you know, the novelty of seeing him after years off has worn off. But I still think he'd be a difference maker in terms of that crowd. And, I mean, you see, I think I see it. He's a difference maker in terms of ratings in the U.S. I think it would be amplified in the U.K. because people haven't had a chance to see him in person, you know, since WWE. So, yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, on CM Punk in general, if no matter what you feel about, like, wanting him back or not wanting him back, him just appearing on AEW television at any point before the end of time is a huge, shocking moment that I think a lot of people think is done and over with that are following it pretty closely. So that has value, of course. And then, you know, what you're talking about there, I mean, the match that screams to me is Kenny and the Bucks versus Punk and FTR, right? I mean, those are kind of the backstage factions, and, you know, there's bad blood between the two tag teams, between the two guys. And, you know, if you're doing a stadium show and you get a premium, let's say a bonus for working together, I think you can probably grease those wheels as much as you need to, but, you know, you would know that a little better than I. So that seems to be a pretty big needle mover. And if you can, A, like you said, keep Punk healthy, and you time all of this at the right spot where it's like, oh my God, I got to see this live. This is like, you know, Brett in Austin in Calgary, you know, this is a once in a lifetime feud, and this is, you know, boiling over in real life and all that sort of stuff. I think that's on paper can work. I'm dubious if it can work with the personalities that you kind of laid out there and timing it right. And having Punk essentially not wrestle at all before that moment is key, because you just cannot risk him getting injured in any way. So I think there's a lot of hurdles to jump over, but, you know, on paper, that feels like a pretty big main event. If you do that with a big MJF match plus two or three spectacle matches that you never thought you'd be able to see before, you know, fill in whatever blank you want, getting a big Zack Sabre Jr. match as a, you know, UK guy, all that sort of stuff, I think you can draw pretty well, especially if you're, you know, $20 a pop for most of those seats. I think you can do it.
Yep. Yep. All right. Very good. Let's bring Frank Pettiani into the show. Here he attended in person. Frank, welcome. Good to talk to you.
Wade, Tyler, how are you gentlemen this evening?
Hey.
We are doing well. We talked to our regular Long Island correspondent, Mark, who gave us really good perspective details from his perspective. I am eager to hear your take on tonight's show. As I said to Mark, kind of a buffet of options to talk about in terms of newsworthy things to be present for. So I'll do the same thing with Mark that I did to you. What do you think of the show? What stood out most? What are you going to remember most about tonight?
I mean, overall, I thought it was a pretty good show. I thought the was really good. You know, I mean, right out of the gate, you had the Jay White debut. I'm kind of curious what the discourse on that is, because I actually wasn't particularly a fan of it. You know, Ricky got a lot of offense in on Jay, and he's in the corner, and Juice is doing most of the work, you know, and then Jay jumps in. So it just kind of felt like an awkward, weird debut. You would think that Jay would want to look strong. So, you know, I'm just curious to see how the opinions shake out on that. But, I mean, he got a huge pop. Now, I don't know what Mark said about the sound, and maybe I'm just getting old and grumpy, but the sound in that arena absolutely sucks, right? Like, I couldn't tell it was
a new arena
right away. It is a new arena, and I don't know if it's their sound, you know, because we had these problems at December taping a couple of years ago. I remember calling you and talking. No, I didn't call you that night. I spoke to you the next day. So I don't know if it's there, you know, on their end or the UBS Arena's end, but, you know, and like I said, maybe I'm getting old, but, like, I couldn't tell his song right away. And I know Jay White's song, you know, like, I know how that song starts. And with him being dressed in black, I couldn't tell right away until they put his name up, and then, you know, we all went nuts. So, I mean, everybody else knew it was him, so I guess I'm the outlier. I guess I'm the oddball here, but, you know. What can you do? But, I mean, he got a huge pop. And, listen, I don't think I've ever been in the arena for a debut like that. I'm trying to think of the times I've called you. I'm trying to think of even before that. I never really got, you know, that kind of an arrival. So that was really cool. I really didn't care that we didn't get the match, to be quite honest. I mean, you know, with Juice Robinson. So, I mean, that was fine. I don't know how other people felt about that. And they took Ricky Starks through the crowd. Like, he didn't go back up the ramp or anything. They took him through the crowd. So I don't know if they were just selling, you know, that he got double teamed or whatever. I was just curious if he got hurt. Did you guys pick up on anything, or did anybody say anything about that?
No, I saw you message me about it, and I just rewound and watched. I mean, he, you know, it came across like he was selling really well, or he might have had, as we used to say back in the day, he got his bell rung on one of the two hard bumps he took. He was kind of checking his mouth, like maybe he thought he knocked out a tooth or hurt his nose or something. So I don't know. I haven't heard anything either way. But, I mean, at least he, you know, was able to get up and you know, be helped out. I mean, I don't think he had some sort of major setback injury. But, yeah, I couldn't tell.
Yeah, I just, you know, you never know with Ricky with the neck. You know, you never know if something popped up. But, like, you know, what happened with Shane the other night when I messaged you, that they took him on the side of the hard camera so nobody, you know what I mean? Like, nobody would see it on TV.
Yep.
That's what they did. They took him, like, through the crowd. So I was curious. But anyway, all that being said, no, listen, you got a good trios match. Fans, it took a little bit to get into it. I'm kind of curious when I watch back. When they went to split screen, I think the entrance, did they go to split screen during the entrance? Cause like they came out and then like the Dynamite theme played and the arena was dark. And then like it came back, like their theme came back on. I'm like, what am I, a WWE show? Like that's what they do. You know, like, I was just curious, you know, if they did that, and did they go to split screen during the match? Because there was a point in the match where it was dull, and it was just kind of slow moving, you know, and people weren't into it. So I was just curious what happened on TV with that.
Tyler, do you remember?
Yeah, I mean, so they went to break in between House of Black and Orange Cassidy and Best Friend's entrance. Without looking at my report,
okay.
I don't know if it went another commercial. I don't think it did. I think it was, the full match, but I could be wrong. I'd have to look at my report.
No, I think it
was slow at first.
Hold on. I'm looking at my report. So Black Mizzy launched Beretta into King, who elbowed him out of midair, and then they cut to a split-screen break 5 minutes in, back from the break.
Okay.
Cassidy ducked a charging King. So, yeah, we got a break during the ring entrance, but in addition to that, a split-screen 5 minutes in.
Yeah.
So about halfway into the match.
I don't even know why I don't have your report. I could just have your report up myself. bad torch contributor.
We're supposed to interview you, Frank.
I know. Terrible. All right. I'm going to stop asking questions. No, we got a good
let me ask you some, Frank.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so I want to ask. I want to lead things here and ask you a couple of things. MJF, I am genuinely curious what you thought of that segment, and I want to get your take on what the crowd thought of the segment. We got Mark's perspective.
Yeah, I mean, the crowd was into it. During his end, he didn't get the pop that I thought he would get, but then as things got going, he got a pop. The crowd seemed to enjoy it, you know, and during his promo, they were definitely into it. You know, they were chanting, what the hell was the teacher's name? Mrs. Benedict. You know, they were chanting stupid bitch. And then when they had Saladino out there, like every other politician, he's a freaking crook. They were chanting lower taxes.
Ah, Tyler, you're right.
Yep. Ask any Long Islander about taxes. That's a pretty sore subject around here. But, no, they were chanting. They were giving him a hard time. But, you know, they were overall into MJF. And you know, I thought the segment was fine. I mean, I thought you could kind of tell. I mean, I think everybody in the arena could kind of tell that something was going to happen when he went back to the band. You know, it was pretty obvious. And then, you know, when you saw the guy with the cymbals, I mean, you know, anybody could figure out it was Jungle Boy. You know, and Jungle Boy got pretty good heat. You know, MJF got cheers. So just like every other time in Long Island, no matter who it is, whoever's opposite of MJF is going to get the heat. So it, you know, it doesn't sync up with the story. So I guess that's just the way it is when they come here. You know, it's, I can't wait for Todd Martin on Friday when I listen to the 60, what he has to say about that. Cause I know he's going to have a couple of comments, but It was fine. You know, maybe a little long, but I mean, overall it was fine.
Tyler, jump in with a question for Frank.
Yeah, Frank. So this is the second or third time in Long Island that you've seen an AEW show, just for like a reference point for me.
Seen every Long Island show, every UBS show I've been to. Yes.
Okay. Cool. So how would you say this compares to, you know, just like the trend of AEW in the region, right? Is it as hot, less hot, crowd-wise, you know, the amount of people there, the reactions, does it, you know, just the murmur in the crowd, all that sort of stuff, the tangible and the intangibles. How do you feel in that market with MJF at the top, how, you know, Long Island is as a market for AEW?
I mean, they genuinely look forward to MJF. You know, they were even chanting his name when they were bringing the balloons out, the Islander colors, you know. This crowd felt a little flat, to be perfectly honest, until the action got good. Like, when the action got good in the trios match, they got into it. When the action got good in the women's title match, they got into it. And then for FTR, you know, they were pretty hot for that. So, I mean, overall, you know, at the point where you would want the crowd up, they were up. But outside of that, you know, it was a little, it wasn't what I expected. You know, the two other shows that I went to, I went last year. It was, I think, May. Crowd was very hot for that show. That was the one where Darby and Jeff Hardy had the ladder match. Very hot for that show.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The one before that, the December 2021, you know, I don't think they had everybody available, so maybe that was it. So, I don't know. If I'm putting a grade on it as far as, you know, the crowd being, you know, hot for the action, I would say it's somewhere between average to good, you know. And as far as the crowd, I'm sure you're going to ask me at this point, there were a lot of patches of empty seats. I was surprised, you know. Now, I don't know if there's a little bit of fatigue this week with WrestleMania, you know. I mean, I don't know how many people, I don't know how much of a crossover is between WWE and AEW fans. I don't know if a lot of people are just, you know, tired, you know, and don't want to go to wrestling, especially after this past weekend. But, like, I'm looking around. We were in the middle bowl, and you could see it stuck out, like the empty seats really kind of stuck out, you know. There was like one section on the hard cam side that was completely empty, and there were patches of like 10, you know, 20 seats just scattered around the middle bowl that were empty. So I was a little disappointed to see that. You would think, you know, I mean, they only hit this market, what, once a year? So you would think that, you know, they'd want to fill out the arena, but not the case. So, yeah.
And then in the same vein of questioning, you know, Tony Khan does his rah-rah speech before and after Dynamite. I think at least I'm assuming he did. How was the crowd reaction to that? You know, was it as ferocious as it has been, or, you know, is it just like a little muted, like you kind of described overall the show was for him, for Tony
crowd
Khan?
Crowd was a little mixed towards Tony in the beginning. I was surprised. I don't know. Am I surprised? I'm not sure.
Huh.
They were a little mixed. But then as he started talking, you know, they got into it. You know, he said, like, you know, I know you Long Islanders love wrestling, and everybody cheered. And then, you know, he announced, that they were going to do Ring of Honor after the show. So the crowd liked that. So, you know, as he got going, you know, they were positive. And then afterwards, you know, when he came out, there was a little bit of a mixed reaction. So it was interesting to me. I don't know what to make of that. You know, maybe it reflects how the promotion has been doing lately, and maybe that's why they're reacting that way. I don't know.
Hmm.
But, yeah, something to interesting observation, I would have to say.
And then just to not to press too hard on that, but, like, mixed, you mean, like, booze or, like, apathy and cheers or, like, all three combined? You know, I know it's hard to quantify, so –
wouldn't say booze. I think choice B. I would go choice B.
Okay.
Did you give cool. me an A? Give me an A.
Mark. Yeah, I think that's good. Yeah. So Mark had given his top three for, you know, biggest reactions being MJF one, Jay White two, and then FTR winning three. Would you say that that was accurate for you where you were sitting as well, or something different?
What do you say, MJF, Jay White? Excuse me, as far as crowd. I'd put the Jay White ahead of MJF, but not like Miles. I'd go Jay White first. I don't know. Maybe Jay White FTR winning than MJF. That's actually the way I would go. I mean, I don't hate.
Did you guys get the big announcement?
No, I don't hate what Mark said.
Go ahead.
I guess just my personal observation was, you know, what I just laid out. So, yeah. You were asking about the big announcement?
And then, yeah, you saw that, I assume, and then was there a reaction, you know, A, for you, and then B, for the crowd? Did it seem like, oh, man, that's they're going to do a stadium show? That's crazy, or like kind of ho-hum of a reaction?
I would say a little better than ho-hum. I don't think people were really all that excited. I mean, you know, Nigel McGuinness got a little bit of a pop, you know, when they saw him on the screen. But outside of that, and then, you know, Adam Cole got a little bit of a pop. But, you know, it wasn't like this, oh, my God, you know, yeah, you know, like how many people in this arena are going to go to London? So it's like, you know, if you're telling everybody we're going to do it all in, listen, if you tell everybody we're going to do an all-in at MetLife Stadium, the crowd's going to go crazy because it's, you know, you know what I mean? Like, it's right there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're going to pack up and go to London? I mean, you know, so what, you know, good for them, but what do you want from me, you know? I don't know.
I'll wave back to you.
Elaborate a little bit more on the FTR Guns match, and did it feel to you like a worthy main event, or on the other side, too big for just a Dynamite? I will insert, I think they could have done more on this episode of Dynamite to build to that match. I think the AEW still has room to grow when it comes to underlining, emphasizing, amplifying why we should really stay tuned and care about the main event. The Guns are a good promo. FTR are a good promo. I would have wedged in one way or the other something to put that the stake to that. Chronographic and Excalibur telling us how we should feel or why it's a big deal. But then when the match happened, I thought it was a little clunky. I don't think it was the best work from FTR, to be honest. But I think the Guns have been coming along, but it didn't have like a big window either. And I know Dax has been just working through so many injuries. And so I don't know if this, like, for me, I don't think it turned out to be like this showcase kind of dream match of an upcoming tag team and this legendary FTR where, okay, now we're in business. FTR are the champs, and look, they're ready to roll. So anyway, just kind of your take on the crowd and if they reacted to it like it was, they're lucky to be there to see this match.
I didn't feel the crowd was all that into it. They started getting into it towards the end with the shenanigans. I don't know if that's because of what you pointed out, the little bit of the clunkiness of the match, or they're just waiting to see what's going to happen at the end, you know, because, you know, everybody's looking at their watch and, you know, they know what time the show ends. So, you know, you're just basically sitting there waiting, like, is FTR going to win this or not? You know what I mean? So the Guns were definitely getting heat when all the stuff was going on with the belts and the low blows and stuff like that. You know, you had even people in my section saying, that's not how wrestling works, guys. You know, like, so you had people making comments. I don't know if that was just out of frustration or that was just, you know, trying to give the Guns a little bit of shit. But, you know, they definitely got into it towards the end. Where did they win by a leverage pin? Like, that sequence kind of came together a little awkwardly, you know, and I think that's maybe what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So it was. It wasn't like people. It wasn't
more
like
than one thing,
hanging.
But yeah.
Yeah, and I think there was a lot of near falls towards the end, as I recall. And like, it wasn't, you know, listen, we just watched a huge tag team main event Saturday night, and the crowd was in on every near fall and everything that was going on. I didn't get that, you know. I didn't sense that in this match, and that's probably to your point. You know, you brought up, you know, is this a match that should have maybe, you know, been on something bigger than television? I don't think so. You know, I mean, the Guns, The Guns are such an unproven talent right now, you know, even though they were the champs. So I think it was placed properly. And Wade, to be quite honest, once FTR won the belts, nobody cared. Everybody was excited, you know. And I know you're going to ask me what happened after the show, because I could see, like, I could see when they won, and like 10 seconds later you see the signature, and I said, Tyler, I didn't know you were co-hosting. I said, whoever Wade is co-hosting this tonight, and Wade probably sitting there like, can you let this wind breathe a little bit? You know, like, it drives me crazy with AEW, but I digress. You know, they did celebrate with the crowd afterwards. I mean, like, they really love the fans. They really do, FTR. Like, they're sitting there, they're taking pictures, they're taking selfies, they're talking to them, shaking hands. Like, they really love the fans. They do. Mark Briscoe came out to celebrate with them, which was really cool, you know. And I could tell he was getting emotional. Tony came out. Again, that mixed reaction that I talked about before. And then Dax gets on. He's talking to the crowd a little bit. And two things. One, he points out that nobody loves wrestling more than Tony Khan. And, you know, he's like basically trying to be Tony's spokesperson at that point, you know, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
And then he pulls out a sign. It's like a ring entrance, like with the AEW ring entrance. And it's like a picture of Tony Khan with Vince McMahon in a headlock. And the sign goes, Vince fears Tony. Right. So, you know, that brings me back to the WCW days when, you know, Vince fears Bischoff, you know, and you got a what was the PG show? So I got to watch what I say. You got an F Vince chant in my section, and it started to grow a little bit. So and then Tony spoke, you know, he talked about, you know, we're going to have the best wrestlers in the world come out for Ring of Honor here in just a little bit. You know, it's just like, OK. You know, about 100 people are going to see it. Like, you know, come on. But I digress.
Yeah.
But like I said, I mean, like, in the end, you know, we could talk about the match all we want, but once the crowd got their FTR win, they were fine.
Yeah, yeah. It still surprised me. They don't say who's going to be wrestling. You know, if you're asking people to stay beyond the AEW main event and what they came for, you know, pitch a match. Have wrestlers come out right afterwards and do an angle just for the crowd to get people to stick around. And this idea that good matches and great wrestlers and the ROH brand is going to get people to stay an hour later after the advertised main event. I mean, come on. It just, you know, but, yeah.
I mean, if my daughter's falling asleep, I got to relieve the babysitter. I mean, I would have stayed, you know, but I'm in a different spot than a lot. You know what I mean? Like, I contribute to you. I'm obviously a different kind of consumer, but not everybody is like that, you know? And another thing, you talked about advertising the main event. Usually, during these tapings, you'll see a graphic, you know, like later tonight, you know, whatever, this match and this, you know. They were just doing that, like basically we were getting what you're getting on TV with, like, the little thing, you know, in the corner, you know? I don't understand. I mean, maybe they can't get it right, but like the ratio on the screens, it doesn't have the entire, screen. In other words, like they have the AEW Dynamite hashtag thing that's cut off, you know, the, whatever they're advertising in the lower left-hand corner is cut off. So like, you don't know what's coming up, you know? So it's like, you know, when you go to like widescreen on your TV and like the corners are all like cut off, you know, that's what it was up there. So I don't know if like the ratio is correct or they have to adjust that, or maybe they can't, I don't know. But the point is, like, in the arena, you know, it's not like emphasized. This is coming later tonight. That's one thing about WWE that's good. Like, at least they put up on the Tron later tonight, this, you know,
I think Tony being a big wrestling fan, I think he thinks, why would people leave if there's great wrestling coming up later and the great ROH brand? And, you know, it's not everybody's like Tony, you know, and you're laying out a lot of the reasons. You got to sometimes give people incentive to stick around. So, Frank, I don't want to keep Tyler too long. He's battling a cold, and we got a couple more emails to get to. But anything else you want to relay to us that you think was, you know, noteworthy to pass along from your experience in the building?
I mean, like I said, overall a good show. Maybe a little bit of a tail off in the second half. The crowd felt kind of
yep.
flat during the Blackpool Combat Club bit. I'm sure you guys talked about that enough. So, you know, they kind of lost me during that. And the same thing with the Sammy got a lot of heat, but I think people were just like not having him, you know. So I'd be curious what the fallout of that is. But you know, overall, like I said, not one of the greatest episodes of Dynamite I've seen. But I, you know, we got our money's worth. We got some good stuff. So we got some talking points. Let's put it like that. Coming out of the show. So yeah.
Frank, you mentioned Blackpool Comic Club. Did it seem like the crowd just wants to cheer them, and then everything is pointing them to boo them, and so they're just sort of like, I just am not into this, so I won't react much? Or what is the crowd? What's the vibe in the building when Danielson and Moxley, and for that matter, Claudio and Yuta, who are likable, you know, respected wrestlers, are trying to force the fans to boo them, I think, against their instincts?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You know, that they came out, the crowd cheered. You know, especially when you play that song, you play Wild Thing. I mean, I think a lot of people have seen Major League. So, you know, they love that song, and they just like the Blackpool Combat Club. And, you know, once again, now we're fighting uphill, we're fighting headwinds, trying to make these guys unlikable. You know, and the actions, my belief is the actions tonight were to force the fans to dislike them, you know, and, yeah, it just, you know, after they did the screwdriver bit, you know, I mean, there was heat. And then afterwards, you know, just a lot of apathy. And Danielson, I violated the you have a year thing. I'm sorry. Danielson kept saying the amateur bit.
Yep.
And he just, like, nobody reacted. Nobody reacted to that because he said it 20 times. It's like,
I don't think Danielson is the best booker of himself when it comes to being a character on a national TV show, getting paid millions of dollars, and you're trying to maximize his value. And it just seems like Danielson wants to kind of do what Danielson wants to do. That's fun for him, and it feels a little disconnected from maybe what's best for the fan experience and Tony Khan and AEW's growth and profits. I mean, he's still always good in what he does. I just don't think people are buying that he's this asshole right now. I mean, it's just and amateur. I just, yeah, it's like sports entertainer. It's just like, come on, give us something else.
Great in-ring worker, not the best. I mean, he can talk, he's well-spoken, but not the best promo.
Yeah.
I think Danielson just have 5-star matches every week and be done with it. That's it.
Or just take some guidance from somebody who's got ideas for how to market you in a way that is more in sync with what AEW fans want. Tyler, what do you think on that? Am I overdoing it on saying, come on, this seems like more of a, you know, self-indulgent, this is what I want to do, Tony, let me do my thing, this will be more fun for me. How do you see it?
My joke answer is fickle for both of you. I think you're right. That's, you know, even when he was walking out of the heel entrance ramp, when they had the old entrance ramp, and he was doing things that were not really heelish, but you can tell that he prefers to do that. He said he's preferred to do that in the past. It just all tracks that, you know, he has full range on his character for the most part, and he prefers to do a character like this as opposed to the babyface chasing and being what is better, like you said, for business. So, yeah, I think it's just, again, another, you know, not a lack of institutional control, but there just needs to be some more guidelines for if you're making over $500,000 a year, maybe Tony Khan is able to dictate exactly what you do on TV or someone else, you know. So that tracks.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Frank, thanks so much. It was great hearing from you. Go relieve that babysitter if you haven't already.
She's gone. She went home. I got to get ready for work tomorrow. thanks for having me, Tyler. It's always good to talk to you, my friend.
Sure.
And you're long overdue to get on my show, so we'll figure something out here real soon, all right?
Sounds good.
Thanks,
all right,
Frank.
Man.
We'll be running your commercial here, maybe right after this segment.
I appreciate that, Wade. Have a good night, both of you.
Yep, take care. All right. So let's hit a couple more emails and then we'll let you get some rest and get some fresh tea, Tyler. All right, Zach in Texas says, gentlemen, off the bat, I just have to say that Jamie Hayter is the best women's wrestler in North America. She's so smooth, charismatic, and physical in the ring. She and Riho put on a great hard-hitting match. Of course, I'm bearing the lead here. AW All In at Flippin' Wembley Stadium. Tony's really going big in the England debut. It's easily the biggest venue they've ever run. I wonder if this event takes place and takes the place of All Out this year. Everyone's wondering that. I don't think it's going to, but that's got its own set of challenges. It would seem redundant to run that event a week later. Now, now that it's time to celebrate FTR, the champs, and they're not leaving AEW, and to that Jay White debuting, and all the free agents are avoiding WWE like the plague. Well, yeah, I don't know if I don't know the circumstance of FTR. I don't know if they wanted to avoid WWE because certainly the Vince news is, you know, him taking back, you know, control of creative for at least Monday night. We'll see if that continues Friday. Honestly, nobody knows. A lot of people are assuming it'll be the case, especially people looking for clicks. But we don't know yet. That could just be Vince in LA wanting to reassert his power. But the next couple of weeks are going to be real interesting. But even if he's around for a couple of weeks, people in WWE are saying he could get bored, or I don't know. We'll see. But that said, FTR re-signed with AEW from what I'm told like a while back. So this was all, you know, a ploy to get you to think they're leaving when they're not. They're the champs. They're re-signed. And it could have been Tony just made them an offer they can't refuse, or it could have been WWE was less interested than they thought. I don't know. The Jay White thing, seems to me that would have predated anything going on this weekend. I think Jay, you know, if Jay's given a good offer and from, you know, really good offer from AEW, I mean, it just seems like he would think that's a better fit for him with the type of wrestling he can do and the audience already kind of knowing who he is. But, you know, there's going to be some people who think, man, it would have been fun to see what WWE could do with him, what they would do with him. But stylistically, I mean, this seems like the right place and the chance that he has to – the best place to really rise up the card and not end up, for good or bad reason, probably bad reason, in WWE, just sort of getting lost in the shuffle a little bit. Tyler, what do you think about FTR and Jay White and the choices that they've made?
Yeah, one thing on that, you know, this is just me spitballing here, but, you know, WWE obviously selling to Endeavor, making that, or merging with Endeavor, and that's going to take place, you know, by Q1 of next year. And they're probably not in a good spot, especially a month or two ago, to be adding a bunch of payroll to someone that they're trying to sell themselves to, right? You want to kind of keep the books as tight as possible. So, you know, does one or two contracts make a difference there? Probably not, but there's probably not the fervor there would have been if, you know, it's 2 years ago and they're AEW's hot and new and they were competing, something like that. So that's one note. But yeah, I mean, like to see Jay White in the WWE that we've seen in the last couple of months, him with a good story and his in-ring talent, you know, his ceiling would be a Seth Rollins type or a AJ Styles type that could actually go to the top of the card and, tell good stories around him, work really good matches. But yeah, in WWE, that type of guy has a certain limit, and, you know, AEW, you know, the people there, and you're comfortable, and, you know, there's not as much expectations on performers there to work a bunch of house shows, to, come in and learn 17 scripts throughout the day, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, as a worker, I can see why you prefer to work at AEW for a number of reasons for similar pay if that was offered. So I don't think it's a bad call by either. Especially for FTR, if they have their podcast. You're definitely not doing a podcast if you work for WWE. So if they enjoyed that passion project, I think AEW is a good call for them as well.
David North Carolina says, Jamie Hayter is not the best women's wrestler, period. She is good, but Charlotte, Becky, Sasha, Asuka, et cetera, are better. Bayley and Bianca too. Tyler, where does Hayter rank? Is Zach overstating things here?
Man, I don't know. I mean, I'm always I think she's in the conversation for sure, which is, you know, a year ago, I don't think we would probably laugh at that statement, right? So, you know, if you're in from a pure, well-rounded wrestler, I don't think she's the best from a storytelling perspective, et cetera. You know, physically in the ring, I think Bianca would have all of them beat from just what she can do in there. But, yeah, I mean, if you would say top five right now, I don't think I would have much debate. But what that top five is, I don't know if I'm ready to do that off the cuff, but she's in the conversation for sure.
Yeah, I mean, this was a statement match for her. It jumped out. I mean, it jumped out in part because how many times have we been sort of let down, or some, you know, some of the women who, you know, have, they've got a following or they've got name value, and the match just turns out not to be very polished. And this just clicked. I would not mind rematches with those two, you know, down the line if they could find a good storyline support for it. That was good. All right, up next, JB from Detroit says, I think it was an interesting idea to have the Bullet Club reunion open the show. I'm in favor of it, as I always like tweaking the formula when it makes sense. Tyler, how valuable is Bullet Club to AEW? Is it trying to live on the past, or is it riding a wave that isn't really slowing down and has like this history and this, that, you know, keeps reinventing itself? Kind of, where are you on the brand name Bullet Club? I mean, certainly it's peaked, but it doesn't mean just because it's peaked that it can't be valuable. But if you're AEW, do you just maybe, is there more value in kind of creating your own, your own stuff? I mean, Black Bolt Combat Club, Inner Circle. I mean, there's all, you know, all these factions over the time have worked. Would it be ridiculous to not just use Bullet Club when you talk about when you're working Jay White into things?
Yeah, I think it's good to use as a traditional or a transitional spot for Jay White specifically. It's something that at least the audience is vaguely aware of, if not acutely aware of. So, you know, is it, you know, where it is right now in New Japan? You know, El Fantasmo, if you haven't heard of him, don't feel too bad. He's the leader of Bullet Club now in New Japan. So, you know, it's not Kenny Omega, it's not AJ Styles, it's not Finn Balor or, you know, Prince Devitt at that time. So it's definitely lost its credence, and it's not quite in that vintage range either, where it's going to be cool in 10 years to be walking around with a Bullet Club shirt if you're a wrestler and, you know, you grew up watching it, all that sort of stuff. So it's in a weird middle ground now. But, you know, that's what he's associated with coming from New Japan. You use that for a feud with Ricky Starks or whatever, and then you transition him into his own group from there, I think works. You know, especially if you're going to have him versus, let's say, somebody currently in Bullet Club at the Forbidden Door show, and then after that you can shut the door on it, have Jay White do his own thing after a couple months in AEW. But, you know, it's fine for that. But if it's, you know, this time next year and he's walking around with Juice and – I don't know, David Finley, I think we got a problem on the growth of that character for sure.
JB, number two, second point is, I predicted a few weeks ago when Juice Robinson attacked Starks at after Revolution, but since this angle is likely leading to Starks versus White, I'm all for it. Is Ricky Starks the right person to use against Jay White at the start, or is that something you like to build to for later when you get elevate Starks better and establish who White is? Or is this a really good way to introduce White and show fans you trust Starks enough to be the first opponent for Jay White?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the way they're going, and I think it's smart. It just, you know, the way AEW works, it is really going to show you kind of where Starks is, where he's going to be, and then like where they value Jay White. Because, I mean, I just think right now Jay White has to win that match to start, but that puts then Starks squarely in that mid-card zone. And then is he a guy that you're then going to write off and he's going to go to WWE, join his friend Cody, all that sort of stuff. So all that meta-narrative is there. But the way Starks been positioned from, you know, Team Taz to right here and being that first key match at a pay-per-view, one presume, against a, you know, the biggest signing of the year, I think is a good spot to be in if you're Ricky Starks. And I think he can do that well. He can carry and bring Jay White into the AEW space in a way that makes it feel more natural than some sort of feud that happened years ago in Japan. These are guys that have never really interacted. So it feels like it's an AEW feud, not a continuation of a past company's feud, which I like a lot. And I think Starks can do that effectively and have a good match. So that's win-win all around.
JB wonders what the match would be in the interim if they build to Starks versus White. And he says maybe Ricky Starks in Action Andretti against Bullet Club in a tag match. And yeah, I can see that. By the way, this is a side item, not part of JB's email, but did they mention Dante Martin on the show? Because I think a shout out and a get well wish and acknowledgement to what happened to him would have been a nice gesture, as opposed to, well, we'll get around to it when he's useful to us again.
Yeah, no, nothing. And nothing from Ring of Honor. Like, you would know who the Ring of Honor champion is if you watched this show. So very strange. I mean, he's getting advice from somebody, or that's his own personal thing. You know, like, do you see Fulham stuff at Jaguar games? Probably not, but like, this is not the same thing. So,
no.
You know, if you had a soccer team here and a football team over in England, you would probably cross promote. And that's the same sort of thing this is. So very strange, but
yeah. And I mean, I just, if Excalibur says, hey, you know, fans, it was a huge weekend of professional wrestling, went, you know, hint, hint, nudge, but big part of it was ROH pay-per-view Friday night. And, and just like to make a habit of touting what goes on ROH on occasion is not going too far. Like, it's sort of like one extreme or the other. Either we got ROH matches and ROH titles and ROH, or nothing. And, yeah. And yeah, I don't see a downside. And just, you know, when you have AEW wrestlers wrestling elsewhere, and one of them who's a star that you've been featuring, I mean, Dante's been featured and touted. There's a really serious injury. I mean, I just think on your flagship show, you should, you know, acknowledge it. And so anyway, okay. Number four, not the best idea of Sammy Guevara of all people cut a babyface promo against MJF on Long Island. Why not save it for literally anywhere else? It went so badly, he had to turn it into a heel promo by the end and act as if that was his intent. I think JB's overestimating Sammy's strategy. I have not seen from Sammy enough. That makes me from what I've seen from Sammy, I'm not confident that he would even have a notion of how to be consistent or how to play that situation. Maybe I'm underestimating him, but you know, you can sit here and go, oh, he started as a babyface, it didn't work, so he augmented to a heel. I just think Sammy is all over the place all the time. And between meta and storyline and babyface and heel, and I love this place, but boo me anyway, and he's on, you know, All Access going, you know, like cut heel promos, I'm trying to get heat. It's paraphrasing there. I mean, I think JB might be giving, I don't know if it's giving him too much credit or not, but it is, he should have the leadership and the direction and not be put in a bad position like that, where, you know, he is struggling out there to kind of find what his voice is. But this was awkward in a number of ways. And, you know, his delivery is kind of vanilla. And, you know, he's best when he is being absolutely unabashedly obnoxious. And when he's out there talking about how much he loves AEW and he's not going anywhere, I'm like, what? Why are you saying that? You're trying to get heel heat.
Yeah, I had a friend text me during this, like, was this a joke? Was this like a prank that somebody put on Sammy to like make him cut this babyface promo here in this spot against MJF? And I was like, I had the same reaction to that friend that you just explained. I was like, no, I just don't think he has good instincts, and there's not the infrastructure within AEW or the safety net in AEW to protect someone in that spot. And also, like, you know, I don't know the backstage dynamics. You know, you referenced All Access. I think that showed a lot last week in a lot of aspects, not just Sammy Guevara, but elsewhere. But, you know, how many people can Sammy go backstage to and ask for advice on this exact promo? You know, if Jericho's not there, I don't know if he has a ton of advocates from veterans back there. So I think that's a problem as well. But, yeah, it was just, yeah, the instincts are bad. Like, I think I've said it here many times. I think Jon Moxley has really good instincts more often than not, especially on promos and crowd reaction and how things go. And I think Sammy Guevara would be the opposite at the moment of just, you know, and that's part of learning, right? Moxley's 10 years older than him and has worked a lot and worked for big companies and had different guidance. And so, you know, it's all different, but yeah, I just don't think it's good instincts.
Yeah. All right. He says, this is a counter to our thoughts on this. He goes, I really like Bryan Danielson's heel promo. I thought it was a good explanation of why BCC turned heel and firmly established them as such. Danielson does a really good job of making sense, but doing so in a way that is heelish and unbecoming. And by the way, was Bryan Danielson's amateur rant directed at Hangman, a reference to the Hangman Punk situation? I don't know. I hope not. I think JB's given too much credit to Bryan Danielson. I mean, Tyler, what do you think is the story of why Danielson turned heel? And is it is what he's saying too true to be heelish, or arrogant, but it's true, and why point that out? I mean, like, I'm just not quite sure how it works. Like, people defended him being the heel environmentalist, and I was like, but he's getting booed for talking about efficient cars, and that's just dumb. You know, like, that's why would he go – and it goes against his own beliefs to go out there and make a mockery of something that in his heart he believes in, and it just would make pro wrestling fans look bad, and I think a lot of pro wrestling fans would be like, wait, why am I booing you saying things that, you know, are one of the reasons I vote the way I do and how I live my life? It's just – that whole thing was so weird, and it's like, oh, it's not what he's saying. It's how he says it. And I'm like, no, that's not enough. You know, if you're saying really smart, wise, you know, things, but you have a tone to you, it doesn't – that there's a better option than that. And almost that almost sounds like what I don't want to put words in JB's mouth here, but almost kind of what he's how he's defending this promo.
Yeah. No, I'm with you, and it's again a lot of things like AEW where you have to kind of fill in your own blanks to explain a lot of characters' actions. And you could easily explain that, you know, after Danielson lost to MJF the way he did and how hard that match was, how hard he trained, how he put everything into it, he let his family down, blah, blah, blah. You can have this promo, and it broke him. And because of that, like, he just wants to now destroy people with Jon Moxley and company. And, like, that would work as a character. And it's not almost there because there's been no explanation, really. And you can say, like, hey, MJF is an amateur for, you know, not beating me like a man. And then this person's an amateur. Everyone he's had an issue with, Hangman, with Kenny, all the people he's had these long feuds with. And instead, it's just, you know, hey, I like to beat people up and everyone sucks but me. And it's just like the lowest common denominator. And even like on his own team, you know, he's talking about Yuta and how he's a, you know, an S-head. And like, it's like, what? That's not helping anything. And like, I know I like heels when they don't like other heels. But yeah, just there's too much filling in the gap. And he just, hey, well, go ahead.
No, finish, sorry.
I just said, like you said earlier, he's just like, he should just come out there and be like, hey, I want to be a heel, and that's what we're doing. Like, that's basically the explanation that it's been. So it's just, you know, not ideal. And your point earlier of him just wanting to do this, preferring to do this, is apt, I think. So.
And no to a screwdriver. No, that's wait. Like, you can't use the screwdriver and jab someone in the eye or the face or whatever, and then move on with the show. Like that's like, that's, it just, it's not a knife, but it's pretty close. Like, hitting someone with a title belt. Okay, a title belt is a natural part of the wrestling scenery. And, you know, heels are going to be like, oh, I'm going to use this to get an advantage. Okay, ring bell. Okay, you save it for a special occasion. You make it mean something. But the screwdriver is not a natural part of the wrestling setting. You're bringing essentially a deadly, crippling, maiming weapon into a context where both wrestlers didn't agree to a no rules situation. So, you know, you can say, if you say it's no rules, it's Texas death, bring your own weapons. Okay. Everyone signed on for that. So the promotion, you know, you could kind of look the other way or go, this is unsanctioned, or, you know, everyone agreed to it. But this, like, Danielson should be suspended like for a year, you know, like, I mean, storyline wise, that's just, so nobody's going to take it seriously. It's like Scott Hall, you know, when he said in my torch talk with him, like, don't say you're going to kill anyone. Nobody believes you're going to kill anybody. Also, don't stab someone with a screwdriver. It's like, that's just so over the top. It's just, I don't even know what to say. I mean, I know he's a popular figure, and I know because he's a good wrestler and a nice guy that we're supposed to look past in just, like, I think utterly dumb things that he does. I just look at that as, like, utterly dumb. I mean, I really do. I don't think there's a context where you don't raise to the level of jabbing someone with a screwdriver in a angle like this. It should be enough to just stomp someone 4-on-1.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And the meta of it, like, if I'm a Jon Moxley, or if I'm even Finn Balor this weekend, you know, he had 14 staples in his head from a ladder shot. Like, when people see things like this with the screwdriver bit, and it's obviously fake, that questions like everything else you ever see in wrestling of, you know, oh, that barbed wire is plastic, or that chair is somehow, you know, not real, or whatever. Like, oh, that's a blood packet in their mouth. Like, if I'm someone's putting my body on the line, like any of the people I just mentioned, like, that sort of stuff, like, would infuriate me a ton. And all your other points are valid, just even for the people in the back. I just can't think that that's like a good sign when you're going out there and taking a razor blade and cutting your forehead open to make a match a little bit better. When someone's going to take a screwdriver and not really do anything to the other person's got to sell that they got their eye pulled out. You know, I guess that happened too in another company, but we'll leave that there.
Which was dumb too. Yeah. like, I mean, you know, it's like Triple H with Sledgehammer. I mean, I never liked that because it's never – whenever he winds up to swing at someone's head, their head will burst like a watermelon. You will literally murder them. There's no other way. So the only – if he ever wound up to swing it at a head, or for that matter, a body, it never happened. The only time it ever got used is when his hand was over the hammer part and he jabbed him. He jabbed people. Yes, that would hurt. But every time he was going to use it in a different – in the other way, you knew it wasn't going to happen. So it was dumb. I mean, and because it can't be used because it's the because of physics. You know, it's just like there's no way. Like chairs, yeah, you can dent a chair. You might give someone a concussion, and we shouldn't be doing it. But you can imagine hitting someone with a chair, and they could continue the match. But so, yeah, I just don't get it sometimes. And I don't get where the leadership is, you know, going, wait, if we're going to do a screwdriver, it's got to be in the right – and we shouldn't do it. You know, I would be against it in pretty much every circumstance, including a bring-your-own-weapons – no unsanctioned brawl. I mean, that's where I might waver a little bit if that's the tone of the company you want. But it's got to be approved. It's an exception. You build up to it, and you have to be prepared for major ramifications. Because, yeah, a screwdriver jabs into someone's mouth, cheek, eye, ear, scraping their head. Oh, you know, scrape. I mean, it's just, yeah. It's just, it's dumb. It's desperate. You can't get out of it what you should, especially in this context. So, anyway, my rant's over. Then he goes, finally, JB says, what's next for FTR? Good question. What's next in the tag division for them?
Oh, man. This is the one time I wish there was, like, rankings. I don't know if there still is on the website. But, you know, the trios division, which we barely talked about that match tonight, which I think is totally fine and apt for the where that kind of was and fit. But, you know, that trios division is really taken down. The tag divisions we talked about many times. But, you know, if it's not the Young Bucks and this next pay-per-view, it feels like you have to do that during this run for FTR if they can work together. So that would make sense. I mean, I don't, the Acclaimed, you know, AEW doesn't mind doing face matches. So is that a thing you want to do? Do you want to burn that? But, you know, beyond that, I'm trying to grasp, you know, Lucha Bros or Taken, you know. I don't know.
Who are the heel opponents? Because, I you know, they'll do a rematch with the Guns, I assume. But Menard and Parker seem like they're heading to feud with the Acclaimed. It doesn't make sense with the Acclaimed against FTR. I mean, save your face-to-face matches for, you know, special occasions when they really matter, not just because you're out of heel teams. So, yeah, I mean, Butcher and the Blade. Honestly, I mean, it's not obvious to me. So I don't know. It's not my problem, but hopefully they got something in mind.
You can do like Jericho and Hager or something. I'm sure Jericho – you know, we'll figure something out to get in a big match at a pay-per-view.
Yeah. So. Azan in St. Louis says, what are the great ideas for FTR's future in AEW? I don't have any. I mean, there should be plenty of good matches for them to have, but the booking's got to line up and it doesn't seem like it is right now. So we'll see. We'll see what they have. He also wants to know if we think how we rate MJF as a singer and does he have a future in showbiz? I think he's got a future in showbiz, but I don't know if his talents at singing rise to the, you know, are at a level where you're like, oh, what's he doing wrestling? He could be a great, and I'm not quite sure that style of singing is going to earn him as much money as being the world champion in pro wrestling right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you did like the, you know, early John Cena, where you're doing like a lot of comedy, you know, lower budget comedy movies, I think he could work really well as like a, you know, a character that did a scene where he's lounge singing or doing like a comedic musical of some sort, like a Jason Segel movie would be. So somewhere in that range, I think he could work and do that kind of raunchy humor that John Cena really focused on when he started doing movies, I think would work for MJF.
Yep. Agree. Tyler, anything else in your notes or on your mind that you want to bring up from the show tonight?
I don't think so. I mean, busy week on that stuff. I'm excited to listen to your hotline that you promoted there to get the update on what you're hearing on all that stuff. But, you know, the women's match is really good. We always hit the things that we are critical of because that's what we do here. But, you know, I'm just happy that AEW is around, that we have a strong second brand for when the ebbs and flows of the number one brand, you know, the highs that I felt this weekend from WrestleMania. I liked a lot of the booking decisions and I thought it was a great show to then kind of have the Raw that we had. This is just me personally filibustering here, but you know, it's good to have AEW. Like you said tonight, you were like kind of relieved. It's just nice to like take a break from all the other news and like the Vince McMahon and the moral, uh, qu- quandary you have with yourself on watching that product, especially now combined with UFC and the way that the workers are treated. So, you know, not that anything's perfect, but it's nice to have AEW around to have that secondary option if you want to ebb and flow with WWE in the new company, what it's going to be. So I'm thankful for AEW being around in general. So, yeah.
Cool. Talk about other stuff you do for the Torch title.
Yeah. So as you said, do my report opposite of you every Wednesday night covering Dynamite. So please give that a read to see my reaction to matches and angles, et cetera. And then tons of stuff on the Torch YouTube page. So youtube.com/PW Torch, myself, Zach Haydorn, and then Stephanie Chase has been added to the team since last time I was on. She's based in the UK, so I'm sure she'll be going to the show coming up here in August. But yeah, we have daily content. We are talking, previewing, reviewing, analyzing, you know, a lot like what we do here and what you do after every show, Wade. But yeah, talking just major wrestling, WWE, AEW, every day, Monday through Friday. So please give us a follow there. We've had about 500 subscribers this past week. So
nice.
I appreciate everyone that has joined. And I know some emailers are regular viewers, people that emailed today. So I appreciate everyone for following that. But yeah, and you know, any suggestions you have for what we do over there, we're open ears and love to interact with you guys and make it a fun, inclusive environment to talk about wrestling. So please give us a shot and just check out some videos. Thanks.
Excellent. And by the way, check out Zach Haydorn's new book on Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking pre-orders, and full information is at the top of pwtorch.com right now. So get information on Zach's new soon-to-be-released book, Stunning, The Wrestling Artistry of Steve Austin, available for pre-order right now. All right, Tyler, thank you. Great talking to you.
Mm-hmm. Good talking to you. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks to Mark and Frank, our inside correspondents, our callers, or emailers, and, of course, the listeners. And we'll talk to you all next time.